Okay, so we are recording. Okay, thank you everybody for coming. It's good to be back. Last week we had I had a little break. I had a busy week and I had a meeting. It was good to be back, and it's good to be learning together
This
again.
conference will now be recorded.
Okay, so we're recording audio and video. Okay, so now this shiur is not directly related with what we discussed last time, 2 weeks ago, but it we'll see how it ties in. So this shiur is titled Ein Simchan Al HaNeis. So it's a famous expression in the Gemara. You're not allowed to rely on miracles. So we're going to see what the parameters of that are. So the reason why it has a connection to the last shiur we gave 2 weeks ago is because we discussed last time where there are situations that could be considered dangerous. We talked to how some of them are physically dangerous, some of them are metaphysically dangerous, and sometimes we are allowed to rely on a miracle because we're allowed to say that Hashem protects, Shomer Pesoyim Hashem. So this is going to tie into that as well. Sometimes we could rely on miracles and sometimes not, ordinarily not. So let's just give some neutral examples of not relying on miracles, nothing to do with danger, just simply not relying on miracles. So some of these things are interesting in their own right. The Gemara says in the Yushalmi Shkalim, the Gemara says that Beis Shulchanas Be'ulam Mibefnim Al Pesach Habayis. So we know that there was a Shulchan. It's one of the vessels that were in the Kodesh, where the Lechem Hapanim were on the gold table. It's mentioned, it's described in Parshas Truma. So the Gemara says in Maseches Shkalim that there actually were a lot of tables in the Beis HaMikdash, and the Gemara goes through what each table was for. So two of the Shulchanas were in the Ulam. The Ulam is sort of is the antechamber before you go into the Heichal, before you go into the room of the Beis HaMikdash that has the menorah and the Shulchan and the incense keteres, the Mizbeach HaKeteres. So before that is called the Ulam. It was a hallway before. So there were two Shulchanas in the Ulam Mibifnim. There were two Shulchanas inside the antechamber in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, Al Pesach HaBayis, that was right next to the door. Echad Shel Shayish, one of the tables was made out of marble, stone. The Echad Shel Zav, one of the tables was made out of gold. And the Gemara explains what the purpose, what the function of these tables were. Al Shel Shayish, on the marble, the stone marble table, Noistim Lechem Hapanim Biknisasai, that's when they would bring the Lechem Hapanim in. They'd bring it in on Friday, it would sit there until they're ready to switch the bread on Shabbos. We know that the procedure of the Lechem Hapanim was that they would rotate the 12 breads. They would place them on the table on Shabbos, and they would remain on the table the entire week until the next Shabbos. They would be replaced the next Shabbos with another set of breads, and that set that was on the table all week would be eaten by the Kohanim. It was Kodesh Kedoshim. We know the halachas of the Lechem Hapanim. So the marble table was where the new breads were placed in the meantime before they were switched with last week's breads. Al Shel Zav, what was the gold table that was there, the extra gold table that was in the antechamber? B'Tziyasai, that's the table they would take the breads off the real Shulchan that was in the Kodesh, and they would place it on this table, another gold table, before they were ready to eat it. Why? Shemalin b'Kodesh v'loy merin. The reason why, when they took last week's bread, the bread that was sitting on the table the entire week, the reason why they would remove those breads and place them on another gold table until they were ready to eat is because, since after all they were sitting on the gold table in the Kodesh all week long, it would be inappropriate to take them off one gold table and put them onto a lesser table. We know that the klal is you want to ascend in Kedusha, you don't want to go down. So over here, there's no higher level than the gold table that was in the Kodesh, so at least we keep it equal, we put on another gold table. That's why when the bread is removed from the real Shulchan that was in the Kodesh, we would at least put it on a second gold table. But the first table was made out of marble. So the Gemara says there in Shkolim, Tani al Shel Kesef. The Gemara makes a statement, or perhaps it's a rhetorical question, why did they use marble? Why didn't they use silver? So the Gemara says this was the table on its way in. So says the Gemara, Rav Yosi b'shem Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak, Rav Chananya motiva b'shem Rav Yochanan. So we have a whole string of Amirayim in the name of Rav Yochanan. Les kan shel kesef. The reason they didn't use a silver table on the way in, mipnei shehu martiach, because the silver table would get hot. In the Beis Hamikdash, the table sitting outside the whole time, it would get hot, and we're afraid that it'll ruin the bread. We don't want to keep the fresh bread on a hot silver, on a hot metallic table, because then it would ruin the bread. So we want to put it on a marble table, which the marble tends to remain cool, and then when you put it into the gold table, it has a better chance of remaining fresh. So the Gemara asks the obvious question, Loi King Tani, but didn't we learn in Pirkei Avos, Ze Echad Min HaNisim Shenasu BeBeis HaMikdash? But isn't there a miracle that occurs every week in the Beis HaMikdash anyway? Shekeshem Shehayu Manichin HaSeichoyim, Kach Hayu Mitzin HaSeichoyim. We know that the bread would miraculously, would magically stay warm and fresh the entire week, even though they put this week's bread, it has been sitting outside on the table just sitting on the table all week long in the Kodesh. Nevertheless, when they took it off the table after the whole week, this Shabbos, it was fresh and warm as if it was straight out of the oven. So anyway, there's a miracle. So why can't we put it on a silver table? We're not concerned it'll spoil. So the Gemara explains, says the Gemara, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Omar, Ein maskir in my senisim. So the Yushalmi words the expression a drop different. Ein maskir in my senisim. We don't mention the fact that there's a miracle. In other words, the Mefarshim there say, we don't rely on miracles. We knew we're living in the Beis HaMikdash, the era of the temple of the Beis HaMikdash. Every week, week after week, there's a miracle that the bread is just as fresh when we take it off the table after being out all week as it was when we took it fresh out of the oven. Nevertheless, we don't provoke that. We don't tamper with that. We don't rely on a miracle. So we try to keep the bread as fresh as we can through natural means. So we keep the bread on the marble table in the meantime, not on a metal table, because the metal would heat up the bread and it would risk spoiling the bread, even though we knew that there's going to be a miracle anyway. But we have to do our share and not rely on miracles. That's the first example, a very neutral miracle, that we're going to rely on the miracle of the Beis HaMikdash, but we're not going to act upon that. Another example, a similar example. I'm sorry?
The Mice and Nisim, the parish on the Haggadah that the Rosh talked about.
Oh, very good. It's called the Mice and Nisim from the Nesibus. Yeah, he probably got it from this Mice and Nisim. That's good. Yeah, interesting. Now, the Yushalmi says in Yuma, Perik Aleph Halacha Dalet, a similar, another nace that occurred yearly in the Beis HaMikdash. So we know that the Kohen Gadol, the beginning of Yuma, the Kohen Gadol will be separated from everybody else for 7 days before the big day of Yom Kippur. And he'd be practicing for his avodah of Yom Kippur. So the Mishnah says there, Kol Shivas Yamim, the entire week of the 7 days preceding Yom Kippur, where he was in the Parhedrin, he was basically in a quarantine, sort of. He was in an isolation, practicing for Yom Kippur away from everybody else. So it says, Kol Shivas Yamim, Lehayu Moinin Mimenu Maichelu Mishnah. So he would have, they would feed him whatever he wanted during those 7 days. He wants steak, they give him steak. He wants pizza, they give him pizza. Whatever he wants, while he's in the Lishchas Parhedrin, while he's there 7 days prepping for Yom Kippur, anything he would order, it would be on the menu. However, Erev Yom Kippur, on Erev Yom Kippur, where there's a mitzvah to eat, Im Hashecha, towards the evening, so we're all sitting down to our feast. It's almost like a Yom Tov feast before Yom Kippur. Lo yayom anichin oisei lechel harbe. They wouldn't let him eat a lot, even though he'll be fasting tomorrow. Shehamaychel maybe as ashina, because if you eat too much, you get sleepy. And the Gemara explains there that we want the Yom. It was basically a gruesome. It was a grueling avodah for the Kohen Gadol, because he had to stay up all night. If the Kohen Gadol would fall asleep the eve of Yom Kippur, we're afraid that he would have a nocturnal emission, and that would disqualify him for the avodah. The next day he would be tummy. So we don't feed him a lot. He doesn't eat a lot of heavy meal before Yom Kippur. We're afraid he'll fall asleep. The Gemara says, in addition to that, he wouldn't eat dairy products. He wouldn't eat eggs, gvina, cheese, basar shamim, fatty meat, old wine, yayin yashan, kunditin, sweetened wine, legrisin, shelpul, some kind of beans, adashim, lentils. So he wouldn't eat any of these specific foods, nothing that could promote a ziva, that could promote an emission. We know that there were certain foods that we're prone to causing emissions. We don't want the Kohen Gadol to be disqualified to be Tameh. So not only wouldn't he eat a lot not to fall asleep, which would risk that, but we also would withhold certain foods that are prone to causing an emission. So the Gemara asks the same question, but isn't this one of the miracles that were guaranteed in the Beis HaMikdash? It says there in the Mishnah that the hundreds of years that the Beis HaMikdash stood, it never happened that the Kohen Gadol would have an emission. So despite all the precautions, apparently it was still a miracle that a drop of Ziva, that the Kohen Gadol shouldn't have any emission whatsoever, that it was clearly a miracle. So why do we have to be so careful? Anyway, there's a miracle. So the Gemara says, Omar Rav Ogin, al shem loy tinasun. So again, it's Yerushalmi. It doesn't use the famous expression, ein soimchen al hanes. It's true, but it says the same answer, and the Mefarshim there explain it the same way. Loy tinasun, you're not allowed to test Hashem. So although Hashem basically is promising us a miracle, it became like a chazaka, it became like an historic fact that there was a miracle that the Kohen Gadol is not going to have any mission. He'll never be disqualified for Yom Kippur. The Kohen Gadol was never disqualified for Yom Kippur. It was a miracle, at least through Ziva. Nevertheless, the Pasuk says you can't test. Don't start up with the miracle. Don't tamper. Don't do something that's relying on the miracle. Lehedya. So these are two examples where we just have a neutral, a pariv, nes. In the Beis HaMikdash, the bread remains fresh, the Kohen Gadol was always pure, and he could rely on the fact that he would never have an emission. It was almost like written in a contract, it was a guarantee, a miraculous guarantee that he wouldn't be disqualified for the Avodah of Yom Kippur. Nevertheless, the Gemara describes how they took precaution not to spoil the bread and not to cause the Kohen Gadol to have an emission, even though they knew that there was a miracle behind the scenes, that it wasn't going to happen anyway. We don't rely on miracles. Now, it's interesting because it ties into last week's parsha. So everybody was discussing this. Not only don't we rely on miracles, but it's Yedua, the Divrei Ramban. It's well known, the words of the Ramban in Parshas Noach, that the Ramban asks, what was the deal with the teva? Why was Noach commanded to create such a teva, to build such a teva? And the pasuk is very specific with the measurements of the teva. The way the Torah describes it, it's as if we're building some gigantic ship that can hold all the animals in the world, two of each or seven pairs of each. It can hold these families, all of their food for an entire year. The pasuk makes it sound like we're building a gigantic ark that could hold all of the animals and all of their supplies. Says the Ramban, as big as the Aron was, it wasn't really that big actually, but as big as the Torah makes it sound, it's a davar yadua, it's well known that teva, and even 10 tevas like it, he says, would never be able to hold all of the people and all the animals and all the supplies and all the waste. So what's the point? So says the Ramban, although it was, he says two things there, but although it was a miracle, says the Ramban, the halacha is, the rule is, you have to be memayit as much as we can from the miracle. We don't rely on miracles. We have to do as much as we can. And this is a rule in life, that although we can sometimes hope for a miracle, we don't rely on miracles. That's not the hanhaga. That's not the way Hashem runs the world. And the Mefarshim explained, because Hashem wants us to be makir, he wants us to recognize him in the teva. If there would be an open miracle, so then we could start thinking that when there's a miracle, there's a miracle, and when it's the laws of nature, then it's something else. It's just the laws of nature that are fixed. Hashem wants us, like the Ramban says, Hashem wants us to take the open miracles and internalize the idea that even when it's teva, even when things seem to be running naturally, but even that is Hashem running the scene. So Hashem really tries to avoid doing supernatural miracles, because Hashem wants us to realize that everything is a miracle. So even when there is a miracle happening, we still are supposed to cover it up and do whatever we can to minimize the miracle. That's the Yesod of the Ramban. Now, coming closer to our discussion, when we're talking about sakana, and this is what we were discussing in the last shiur, that we're not supposed to put ourselves at risk, and we can't just say that we're going to rely on a miracle. We can only rely on a miracle. We can only say, Shomer Pesoyim Hashem. We can only say, that Hashem will protect us if it's something that's common and that people are usually not careful. It became standard not to be careful, not to consider such a thing to be dangerous. But if something is clearly considered to be dangerous, then we have to take the natural precautions to protect ourselves from that. We can't just say we're going to rely on a miracle. So the Gemara says in Masechta Shabbos, Daf Lamed Beis, a famous Gemara, Omar Rav Yanai. Rav Yanai says, La'oilam al yamin adam b'makom sakana. A person's not allowed, not supposed to stand, put himself in danger. Loy marsh oisim loy nes. A person shouldn't put himself in danger saying he hopes that a miracle will be. He's being reckless, and he hopes that Hashem will protect him, that he'll have a miracle. Why not? For two reasons. Shema ein oisim loy nes. Simply put, maybe the miracle won't happen. So you can't rely on a miracle, because who says Hashem will perform a miracle? V'im oisim loy nes, and even if Hashem does perform a miracle, minakin loy misfuyosav, but that has a price. It comes with a price. If Hashem does go out of his way to perform a special miracle for you, that costs, it costs the schus, it costs a mitzvah. Whatever merit I have that I'm hoping to reserve for the Olam Haba, if I draw on that, if I create a situation where Hashem has to go out of his way to perform a miracle, that could cost me and that can use up some of my schus. How do we know? Omar Beit Chanan, Ma'ikra, what's the pasuk? So Yaakov Avinu says in Parshas Vayishlach, that Yaakov Avinu was afraid that because Hashem was so good to him in the house of Lavan, and that he was saved from running away from Esav, Yaakov was afraid that he used up some of his chusim, and Hashem promised him there that he didn't use up his chusim. But the risk exists. A person should not put himself out there and rely on a miracle, because A, the miracle might not happen, and B, if it does happen, it comes with a price. So here's the question. It's a well-known Gemara in Maseches Brachos that there was once an animal called an arvad. Now an arvad, Rashi says, is some kind of mystical or mythical animal that's a combination, it's a hybrid between a nachash and a tzav, which a tzav is a toad, if I'm not mistaken. So it's a hybrid between two different reptiles, between a snake and between a toad. So it creates some kind of horrendous creature called an arvad. And this creature was mazik. It was killing people. It was a danger to society. Like imagine, like you have these stories that there's a lion running loose or something. So there was this arvad that was running loose and endangering the population. They went and they informed Rav Chanina ben Doisa. So Amar Lahem, so Rav Chanina ben Doisa says to them, he says to them, Heruli as churai, show me his hole, show me where he lives, show me where he hides. Heru as churai, they showed him where he was hiding. There was like a hole in the ground and this serpent was in the hole. Nosan akevoy al piachur. So he put his foot, it seems like it was a bare foot. He put his bare foot on the hole. Yotzu v'noshchois, the arvad came out and bit Rav Chanina ben Doisa. Umeis oisoy arvad. So instead of Rav Chanina ben Doisa dying, instead the arvad died. So not the lakseifa, Rav Chanina ben Doisa, he pulled the creature out of its hole. He put it on his shoulder, hevil the base of medrash, he brought it to the base medrash, and he decided to teach everybody a lesson besides. So besides removing this public hazard, he went and he taught the tzibur a lesson. Omer lehem ru'u bonai, look my children, ein arvad memes, it's not the serpent that kills, this creature that kills, ela hachet memes, it's the sin that kills. Because Rav Chanina ben Doisa says about himself, I don't have any sins, and that's why I was able to just go and capture the arvad. The arvad actually tried to harm me, but instead the arvad himself died. It's not the arvad that kills, it's the sin that kills. But oisei shah omru, so at that time it became like a public statement, like a slogan, oilei la'adam shepagah by arvad, woe is to a person who meets up with this arvad. However, oilei la'arvad shepagah by Rav Chanina ben Doisa, but woe is to the arvad that meets up with someone like Rav Chanina ben Doisa. So this is a fascinating story. Rav Chanina ben Doisa was sort of like a Samaritan. He was going to save the neighborhood from this arvad, and he went and with his bare hands, or I should say with his bare feet, he went and he killed the arvad. The arvad tried to bite him, but Rav Chanina ben Doisa had the last laugh, and the Arvad died as a result of killing, of trying to kill, of trying to bite Rav Chanina ben Daisa. A beautiful story, and it taught people a lesson that you see from here, the how powerful mitzvahs are. So here's the question. The Marsha over there in Brachas asks the obvious question, that very nice that a miracle occurred for Rav Chanina ben Daisa after the fact, but asks the Marsha a koshuk tzas. He has a bit of a question. Heich oman b'mokum sakana kazu. How could Rav Chanina ben Daisa put himself in danger, v'somach atzmai al neis, and rely on a miracle? How could he do that? At the end of the day, the miracle was performed, and Rav Chanina ben Daisa came out of this safely, and he removed the public menace, and he killed the Arvad. But how could he put himself in this situation to begin with? So why can't the person put himself in danger and rely on a miracle? The Gemara says in Shabbos, for two reasons. A, the miracle might not occur. B, it takes away the person's schus. So how could Rav Chanina ben Daisa put himself in danger? And it's interesting because the Marsha does not seem to resolve this question. The Marsha cites a different Yushalmi who says, Mefarish be'inin acheres. So the Yushalmi relates the story differently. Sha'omad Rav Chanina ben Daisa. Rav Chanina ben Daisa was in the middle of his Shmona Esrei. And then Bo Chavarva. The Yushalmi has a different word. It doesn't say it's an arvar, it's a chavarvar. I don't know if it's the same creature or not. Hekishu, and it tried to bite Rav Chanina ben Daisa, v'hifsik tfilasai, but Rav Chanina ben Daisa did not interrupt his tfila. He was so immersed in tfila that he didn't interrupt his tfila. Umatsu oisai chavarvar meis, and instead of Rav Chanina ben Daisa dying, it was the chavarvar, it was this creature that died. So the Marsha asks the question, how could Rav Chanina ben Daisa deliberately go and put himself in danger, searching and provoking this Arvad and killing the Arvad? How could Rav Chanina ben Daisa rely on a miracle? The Marsha does not answer his own question. Instead, he cites a Yerushalmi that seems to have a different version of the story, that Rav Chanina ben Daisa did not go after this animal, this creature. Instead, he was just davening innocently, minding his own business, and this creature came and tried to start up with Rav Chanina ben Daisa, and as a result, the creature died. So the Marsha seems to be saying that the Yushalmi is more in line with his question, that he never would have put himself in danger. On the contrary, it was just by accident that Rav Chanina ben Daisa ended up killing this chavarvar. But it doesn't resolve the question, because at the end of the day, the Bavli, our Gemara, clearly says that Rav Chanina ben Daisa, the version of the story was that he went out after this arvar or chavarvar and was killing it, clearly relying on a miracle, clearly being secure in the fact that Hashem would protect him and he would be successful killing this Arvad. There's
but you can't say that in the Kanabadasa and the Schus of the Tzibur, that's what says.
So that's a very good question. So some people actually say that. Some people say that he was relying on the Schus of the Tzibur. That's one of the theories out there to answer the Marsha's Kasha. Yeah, that's a very good point. So you could,
because
you,
not relying on the nace is actually being mefarsim.
So right, so he is relying on a miracle, but he was relying on the miracle in the schus of the tzibur, right? So the way we would say it is, like you're saying, that the whole reason not to rely on a miracle is because who says it'll happen? And B, it'll take away my schusim. But maybe if you're doing it mikoyach the tzibur, as a schus of the tzibur, then maybe you could be more secure that it'll happen. And it doesn't take away from your schus, because it was in the schus of the rabbim that's more powerful. So that would be a good teretz, and I saw some people suggesting that. There's a gemara in Maseches Tainus where we won't be able to give that answer for this gemara. The gemara says in Maseches Tainus and Chaf Amud Beis that hahi ashisa ru'ua, there was once a rickety wall. There was once a wall, like a condemned house, a rickety wall. The wall was destined to collapse at any moment. The Havi ben Arda, it was in the city of Narda. The Havi Chalef Rav Shmuel Toisa. And Rav and Shmuel both refused to pass by this wall because the wall seemed to be at risk of collapsing at any moment. Afogav the Kaima, it says there Ba'asra, it's spelled, it's a typo, even though the wall stood for 13 years the way it was, but it looked like it can fall at any moment, so Rav and Shmuel would not pass by this wall. Yom Echad, one day, Iklu Rav Ada Bar Ava Lahasam. So the great Rav Ada Bar Ava was there. So Omer Le Shmuel Le Rav. So Shmuel says to Rav, they're traveling along the way, Nesi Mar Nakif, let's follow our normal routine of going around the scenic route to avoid that condemned house because we're afraid that the wall is going to collapse. We don't want to put ourselves in danger. We certainly don't want to lose our schosim. So let's continue in our practice of taking the scenic route around. So now, this time Rav said, Loitzerichna, we don't have to. This time we can go straight through the condemned house. Because Rav Ada Bar Ava is with us this time. And the Gemara says, the Nafish Skuse, and he has tremendous schosim. Beloy Mistafina, I'm not afraid. If we go through this condemned house with Rav Ada Bar Ava, I'm not afraid that the house will collapse because he has so many schosim. We'll just grab onto his coattails and we'll just be able to go through the house relying on the schus of Rav Ada Bar Ava. And there's another story there that Rav Huna, Havalehahu Chamra, Behahu Besa, Re'ia. So Rav Huna had a Chamra. A Chamra could either mean a donkey or it could mean wine. He had a Chamra in a house, in a condemned house, Uboy Lefnuye, and he wanted to remove he wanted to clear out his belongings from the house, his donkey from the house. Ailein the Rav Ada Bar Ava. So he brought Rav Ada Bar Ava along with him as his personal schusgar, his bodyguard. He brought Rav Ada Bar Ava with him into the house, lahasam, mashchei b'shmeitza, so he distracted Rav Ada Bar Ava from what he was attempting to do. He got involved in a Torah discussion, mashchei b'shmeitza, he drew him in, talking and learning. Rav Ada Bar Ava got so immersed in the learning that Rav Ada Bar Ava just followed Rav Huna into the house. Apparently, Rav Ada Bar Ava himself would not have entered this house because you don't want to put yourself in danger. But Rav Huna distracted him with a good Dvar Torah. He brought him into the house at the panye until Rav Huna had time to clear out the house. Basar the Nafik. So then once he finished clearing out his merchandise from the house, so Rav Ada Bar Ava came out of the house, Nafal Besa, and lo and behold, the house collapsed. Argish Rav Ada Bar Ava. Rav Ada Bar Ava felt, he realized now, what Rav Huna just did. You dragged me into the house in order to protect you, that the house shouldn't fall. You're using me to rely on a miracle? So Ikbid. So Rav Ada Bar Ava, he was particular. He got upset. He was upset Rav Huna sort of took advantage of Rav Ada Bar Ava's schosim to bring me into the house to protect you, that the house shouldn't collapse while you're unloading, while you're moving your stuff out of the house. And then as soon as you're done, you take me out and the house collapses. So Rav Ada Bar Ava was makbid. Why was he makbid? Why was he upset? Why did he take issue? We quoted the Gemara before, the Gemara in Shabbos, the Flamed Beis. Sabalaki hada om Rav Yanai, because Rav Ada Bar Ava subscribed to that which Rav Yanai says, La'oilam al yamed adam b'makam sakana v'yomer oisli nais, because you're not allowed to put yourself in danger and rely on a miracle. Shema ain't oisli nais. Number one, perhaps the miracle won't occur, and intim soleimer oisli nais, and even if the miracle does occur, menakalam ischi oisav, it detracts from the person's chusim. So Rav Ada Bar Ava was upset that Rav Huna sort of took advantage of him, exploited his schusim, and brought him into this house, and relied on Rav Ada Bar Ava's schusim to protect him and to rely on the miracle that the house shouldn't collapse. So we have over here Rav Chanina ben Doisa, who relied on a miracle, b'schus the rabbim, to capture this animal, to kill this animal. And the Marsha asks, how did he rely on a miracle? And then we have the story where Rav and Shmuel relied on Rav Ada Bar Ava to pass by the broken, the condemned wall, and not to be afraid that the wall will collapse. And Rav Huna even went a step further, that he actually brought Rav Ada Bar Ava into a condemned house, being secure in the fact that the schusim will protect him, and that he can rely on the miracle that the house will not collapse. So there's a Kshuvas HaRashba. The Kshuvas HaRashba there, we actually talked about this Kshuvas HaRashba when we were talking about relying on metaphysical remedies, the Rambam and the Rashba. So we discussed that there's an argument between the Rambam and the Rashba, how much credence we give to sort of alternative medicine or even many physical medicines that we don't understand how they would work. So that same Rashba in the Chelek Aleph, Taf Yud Gimel, that Rashba really asks this question. And the Rashba says, Chayiv Adam Mishpabo B'Darkei Teva, a person has to put effort and he has to protect himself. B'Darkei HaTeva, a person has to protect himself with natural means. Ve'ein Soimchen Al Hanes, and you're not allowed to rely on a miracle, like the Gemara says. So the Rashba brings that halacha. However, the Rashba makes an exception. Zulasi hu anoshim hashleimin. This except barring people that are perfect, uschuyoseihem merubois, and who have tremendous schuyas. If you have a special perfect person, anoshim shleimim, outstanding people, unique people, one in a million kind of a person, his schusim are merubois, and he actually brings, like Rav Chanina ben Doisa and the Arvad. So the Marsha asks the question, how is Rav Chanina ben Doisa allowed to rely on a miracle? So it's very interesting because the Rashba in the Tshuva already asks this question, and the Rashba in the Tshuva explains that there are exceptions to the rule of Ein Semchel Al Ameis. The Rashba says that a special outstanding person who taka has a lot of schusim, so he can rely on a miracle. He's allowed to rely on a miracle. And Rav Chanina behakshafim, Rav Chanina also in Meseches Chulin, there's another example where there was once a witch who was performing kishuf. So in those days there was this black magic where the kishuf could really affect someone. And the Gemara says the reason why it's called kishuf, kishuf is a contraction. It's machishin pamalya shomayla. Kishuf means that kishuf could interfere with the natural running of the world. Hashem wants the world to run a certain way. Kishuf is a contraction. It's machish pamalya shel maila. So the chaf in the shin is machish, that it disrupts, it interferes, it contradicts pamalya shel maila, that which was decreed in the heavenly court. So it's a fascinating concept that Hashem wants the world to run a certain way, and a witch can come along with kishuf, and she can change, or he can change, the natural order of events. So kishuf really works if we can access these powers. Of course, Hashem is the one who created these things. Hashem, it's part of the scale of Bechira, that a person could be zoichet to nevua, high levels of spirituality, and the counterbalance to that Bechira, like the Maral explains, is to access the dark forces, the black magic in the world. Hashem creates this balance that we can, not only do we have a bechira if we want to do an aveira or not, if we want to succumb to our physical desires, but we also have bechira in sort of the spiritual world. We can either go for the true, authentic spirituality, or we can go for some pseudo spirituality, some kishuf, which is something that people can access. So whatever, Hashem put it into the world, but it's a real thing. So says Rav Chanina ben Doisa there in Chulin, I'm not afraid of it. Why? Because Ein Oid Melvadoi. My level of Amunah is so high that I know that ultimately, even with all of the kishuf, nothing could happen without Hashem allowing it to happen. Even though kishuf is called machish and pamalya shomayla, all of that having been said, but ultimately Hashem is in charge. See, he was able to raise himself above all physicality, attach himself to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he wasn't even afraid of kishuf. Even though kishuf could change the natural order of things, but he was able to raise himself above and beyond that. So that's what the Rashba says. Now, the question is, we're up to ice tests in the notes, the question is, but there are two reasons why you can't rely on a miracle, the Gemara says. The first reason was because the miracle might not occur. So, okay, maybe somebody who has tremendous chusim, like Rav Chanina ben Doisa, by the Arvad, or maybe Rav Ada bar Ava, maybe they can be sure that the miracle will occur. So perhaps we can understand that we don't have the first reason. But what happened to the second reason? Doesn't the nace, the miracle, detract from his chusim? So just because he has tremendous chusim, why wouldn't they be afraid that it would detract from their chusim? How did the Rashba answer the question? So there's a famous Gemara in Masechus Tainus, and this is my suggestion to answer the question, to explain an explanation of the Rashba also about Rav Chanina ben Doisa. The Gemara has an expression in Masechus Tainus on the Chaf Hei Amud Aleph that Rav Chanina ben Doisa was melumed b'nisim. Rav Chanina ben Doisa was accustomed to miracles. There's a famous story. One time his daughter mistook the vinegar instead of the oil, and she poured vinegar into the leichter, and she lit the candles with vinegar instead of the oil. Back in those days, not having your Shabbos candles lit meant you'd be sitting in the dark, We talked about the mitzvah of Kavod Shabbos, Oinik Shabbos. So now the daughter was afraid that she ruined the Shabbos. She ruined the Friday night Suda for her father because she forgot. Instead of putting oil, she realizes her mistake. Like she put vinegar into the lamp, into the leichter. So Rab Chanina ben Doisa said, Biti, ma ich baslach, what are you worried about? Rab Chanina ben Doisa was so above the normal, the natural running of the world. The same Hashem who gave the oil the power to kindle, to be fuel, the same Hashem could just as easily allow the vinegar to be fuel for the flame. And the vinegar will fuel the fire. You put in, normally we use oil. That's the way Hashem created the world. But the vinegar, if Hashem wants, vinegar could fuel the fire just as much as the oil. That's what Rab Chanina ben Doisa says. And the Gemara there in Tainus says other miracles that instead of the bear eating his sheep, so his sheep would go and catch the bear on the horns of the goat and drag his flock of goats would come home, each carrying bears on the horns of the goat. Just things that were totally beyond comprehension. L'mayla min ha-teva. The Gemara says, Rab Chanina ben Doisa was so unique, he was melumid benisim, he was experienced, he was accustomed to miracles. So the idea here is that when it comes to such a special person who is so over and above the natural order of things, he came to the realization that teva, that nature, and miracle are all the same thing. He came to the ultimate realization that there's no difference between a miracle and between teva. So, pun intended, a miracle is second nature. There's first nature, there's the actual order of things, there's nature, and then you have a miracle. A miracle is second nature. It's just as easy for Hashem to perform a miracle as it is for him to run the world in his routine way. What's the reason why Hashem doesn't want to perform miracles and why we shouldn't rely on miracles? Because that's not the way Hashem wants to run the world. Hashem wants us to see him in the Teva. But what if you're such a special person that you already see Hashem in the Teva? And for you, you believe that the Teva is just as much a miracle as anything else is. Like Rav Dessler says, a miracle is just something that doesn't happen all the time. But planting a seed is just as miraculous as some splitting of the sea. Everything is Hashem behind the scenes. So for him, Teva and Nes are identical. So it doesn't even take away from his schus. It doesn't even take away from his schus because nothing out of the ordinary is happening. Just like the oil can light, that doesn't take away from my schus. That's the way Hashem wills it to be. So the vinegar can also light. It's not going to take away from my schus because I believe so strongly that Hashem could do everything. It's not even considered like Hashem is doing something special because I appreciate the teva just as much as the nes. And the same thing applied to Rav Chanina ben Doisa killing the arva. So perhaps that's what the Rashba meant. So the question was, how can he rely on a miracle? Maybe the miracle won't occur. So that's not a question, because he knew the miracle would occur. Second question, why doesn't it detract from his schusim? So the answer is because it only detracts from his schus if it's something out of the ordinary. But for him, teva and nes were identical. He was on such a level that it was identical. In this week's parasha, in Parashas Lech Lecha, there was a famine in the land. So Avram went down to Mitzrayim, and he took Sarah down with him to Mitzrayim. So he was going, presumably, to save himself from the famine. A famous Ramban, Vida, you should know, Ki Avram Avinu chato chet gadol b'shkago. Avram Avinu sinned. It was a shoygi, it was by mistake, but he erred. Avram Avinu erred in a big way. Shehevi ishtoi hatzedekes b'michshol avon. Because he brought his wife, and he put his wife in danger of being kidnapped by Paro, but they pachtoi pen yargu, because he was afraid that they would kill him. So he sort of offered his wife, the way the Ramban presented in such a rigid way, that Avram Avinu presented his wife, and he was prepared to cause his wife to sin in order that they shouldn't kill him. That's how he presents it. Hoyaloy liftoyach b'Hashem. He should have trusted in Hashem, that Hashem would save him and his wife and everything that he has. So he shouldn't even have left Mitzrayim, says the Ramban. It was a mistake to leave, he shouldn't even have left Eretz Israel in the first place, says the Ramban. Because even though there was a famine, he should have trusted in Hashem. Going down to Mitzrayim and risking his wife, that was a big chet, says the Ramban. It was a mistake. He should have trusted in Hashem. Yesh belokim koyach lazer lahatzah, Hashem can always help. So you see from this Ramban that the Ramban is almost criticizing Avram, that Avram should have trusted in Hashem and he should not have done tachbulos. He should not have had strategies to leave Eretz Israel and go down to Mitzrayim, knowing that Mitzrayim was a makom of shtufei zima. But here's the question: what about the klal of Ein Soimchin al Hanes? Why is Avram held accountable? Why is he criticized for trying to strategize not to die in the famine, even if it meant going down to Mitzrayim? So we have to say that the Ramban is like the Rashba, that someone as great as Avram, he should have taken to heart that he's lamaylam in hateva. There's an interesting in our story, in our parsha, there's another story in our parsha, that Avram Avinu went to war against the four kings to save his nephew Lot. So the Chavetz Chaim says in the Psicha to Avas Chesed, Shekosav Avram Avinu, he put himself in danger to save Lot, and the Haggah, so the Chavetz Chaim writes in the footnote, Afal pi deyesh sakana bedavar, even though it was dangerous, Botach Hashem shlihi'una loy kora, that he trusted in Hashem that nothing, no harm will befall him. So it's very interesting, the contrast, that at first Avram Avinu went down to Mitzrayim, but then he was willing to put his wife into at the same time he was willing to put his own life into danger, trusting Hashem in order to save Lot. So perhaps Avram Avinu, out of his humility, would be afraid if it's only for him, but to save Lot, to save somebody else, maybe he felt that he would be on the level of being Lamaila Minateva. So when it came out, what is the halacha? Halacha lamaisa. This is a bit of a gadata. Halacha lamaisa, is a person allowed or required to put himself into a suffix sakana in order to save somebody else from a vaday sakana? So the poskim actually discuss it in Choshen Mishpat Tafchav Vav, in the halachas of Loisamen al Dam Reyecha, the Sma, Sifkat and Beis, brings a different Yushalmi, that a person is obligated to put himself into a suffix sakana in order to save someone else from a vaday sakana. That's the Yushalmi. But it's interesting because the Shulchan Aruch does not bring that Yushalmi. The Pischik Shuva explains because the Bavli might argue on the Yushalmi. So it might be a machoikis, is a person required to put his own life at risk to save somebody else? The Radbaz, that the Pischik Shuva brings an interesting shita, a person is not obligated to sacrifice a limb. This would probably be like donating an organ. A person is not required to donate an organ or to sacrifice a limb to save someone else, but it is a midas chasidus. But says the Pischik Shuva, in order to be machnas himself into a suffix sakana, that would be considered a chasik shoita. One should not put himself into suffix sakana to save someone else. Nevertheless, the Pischik Shuva says something fascinating. A person, it's better to err on the side of saving someone. In other words, if I have a question, should I run into the burning house to save someone? Should I run into the ocean to save someone? So the Pischik Shuva says, you have to judge it carefully because you don't want it to be held against you that you could have saved. So it's better to err on the side of saving the person. Go for it. Go save the person. If you would be sure that it's mamish a suffix sakana, then you're not required, or perhaps you're not allowed, a chasik shoita, to risk his own life for someone else. But it's better to err on the side that you think you can do it, muster the energy to do it, and then you can rely on the miracle. Now, we talked about this last time from Shlomo Zalman Orbach, that when do we assume that something is dangerous, and when do we assume that it's not? So Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach says that he's not sure, but his feeling is that if the world doesn't take it as a sense of urgency, you don't have to consider it a danger. But if the world at large considers it dangerous, then we have to consider it dangerous. So that's what Rav Shlomo Zalman said. We talked about that in the last year, 2 weeks ago. I was thinking that based on this Shuvas HaRashba, and based on the story of Hanina ben Doisa, and based on the story of Rav Bar Ava, just like people on their level, once they consider the miracles to be just as normal as the Teva, so for them they can rely on a miracle, perhaps this gives us a deeper understanding in the words of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, that once the world at large no longer considers something dangerous, So then it becomes teva, and then we can rely on the miracle. So we're making an analogy from the super high levels of the people that are nefishei schusei, that have tremendous schusim. We can bring that down as an application to people down on our level, that once the world at large considers it teva, it's no longer a menaka from the schuyas. It no longer takes away from our schuyas, and we can rely on Hashem, and that's where Shomer Besoyim Hashem comes in. Okay, Yashikoyach, everybody. Thank you for joining. Yeah.